Good morning. This is Brian Trumbor with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 13th. While we need time to figure it all out, this past week has the potential to be a truly momentous one when the history of the 21st century is written. I'm referring to the elections in both Lebanon and Iran that I've been focusing on since last year, and which is the reason why, while I'm bullish on equities in terms of overall performance for 2009, I only increased my model equity exposure from 20%, the level in 2007 and 2008, to 50% at the start of 2009. That may have seemed like a contradiction of sorts, but far from it. Aside from the incredible uncertainty on the global financial front, a strength in Hezbollah in Lebanon represented a major threat to Israel, and thus the entire region, while Iran's growing nuclear program represents a threat of a different sort that would extend beyond the Gulf to Europe and the United States. To ignore such geopolitical factors when looking at one's portfolio is to play the role of village idiot. When it comes to analyzing the markets the past few weeks, however, I have to admit I'm trying to run out the clock until we get to mid-year, when I'll take an extensive look at what I've said, where we are, and what's to come. As one who rarely changes his opinion from quarter to quarter, let alone week to week, I hope you understand. If you're into Fast Money or Paris Hilton making out with Ronaldo, well, there are other sites for such fare. For now, though, while I have further analysis of the Lebanese and Iranian situations in my Week in Review column, we need to wait 24 hours, as I'm fond of saying, for more clarity. But for a number of reasons, there is cause for guarded optimism. In the case of Lebanon, at least thus far, any fair-minded analyst must give President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden some credit. Obama for his Cairo speech and Biden for his visit to Beirut in the days preceding the vote, for flatly stating that a turn away from the existing pro-West leadership would result in a cutoff of U.S. aid. I said of Biden's visit on May 30th, it was an aggressive foray by Biden slash Obama, especially as it was his only stop in the region. It's just impossible to know if more voters than not see it as interfering in their election, close quote. One can only conclude in hindsight it was a risk worth taking. As for Iran, as I record this, state television declared Ahmadinejad a landslide winner, 65-32, with 80% of the vote counted. But prime opponent Hossein Mousavi said he had the landslide victory, not Mahmoud. Ayatollah Khamenei, though, has the final say. But according to reports, the Interior Ministry and Revolutionary Guard goon squads have been out in force, including kicking out Mousavi's headquarters staff responsible for keeping the websites running. Regardless of the outcome, however, Iran's people exhibited tremendous courage in calling for change, and this story is just beginning. As for the global economy, it was a mixed picture, yet global equity markets once again hung in there, with Tokyo's Nikkei index closing above 10,000 for the first time since last October, while stocks in the U.S. posted only fractional gains, but gains nonetheless. The bad news has to do with the growing onslaught of debt and rising interest rates that, while still historically low, threaten to choke off any recovery in housing, which, coupled with the labor market, represents one of the two key variables toward attaining real growth rather than just stabilization and stagnation. The emerging school of thought, as best spelled out by the likes of Bill Gross and Muhammad El Arian at PIMCO, is that we will see punk growth of 1-2% for years to come, the new normal, as the United States deals with the implications of financing its crushing deficits. Others, a distinct minority, say the recovery could be swift, while the third school says the economy will roll over anew, that the financing issues, housing, oil price spikes are just too much to overcome. Me? I'll spell it out in full in 2 weeks, but I have consistently said all year you have to separate the fundamentals from sentiment, and that when it comes to the stock market, positive sentiment will lead to 20-30% returns in the major averages by year end. Back on March 6 and 9, it looked like I was nuts. Today I look a little better, but as I hasten to add last week, we have a long, long ways to go in 2009, and as further exhibited by Lebanon and Iran, let alone North Korea, no shortage of hotspots to deal with in the interim. Speaking of fundamentals, though, the Federal Reserve released its survey of regional economic activity and saw a little improvement in the 12 districts, but at least things weren't getting worse. Importantly, outside of oil, prices were flat or falling. Economist Paul Krugman, who has been right in his dire pronouncements, said this past week that there is, quote, reason to think that we're stabilizing, close quote, and that the economy would turn up by September, though remain depressed for an extended period. In China, fixed investment, roads, airports, and such, soared 40% in May, industrial production was up 9% for the same month, and retail sales increased 15%, all good and better than expected. But May exports were off 26% from year-ago levels, not good, though most say in line, and another sign of a bottom. Consumer prices here in May, incidentally, fell 1.4%, and producer prices a whopping 7%. In Japan, aside from improving sentiment among stock investors, bankruptcies fell for the first time in a year in May as government programs appear to be having an impact. But while in the UK, manufacturing in April was up as exports and housing appear to be stabilizing there, overall in the Eurozone, industrial production in the 16-country region fell 1.9% in April, or down 21.6% year-over-year. The steepest such decline since records have been kept going back to 1991. Separately, Germany's exports fell 28% in the month. And the World Bank said the global economy would shrink by 3% this year, far worse than an earlier 1.75% estimate. The IMF says the global economy will decline 1.3% in 2009. Back in the States, the week was light on economic news, but May retail sales, if you exclude gasoline, which in case you haven't noticed, spiked anew, but fear not, friends, we're topping. We're in line with expectations, up 0.2%, another sign of stabilization, while reading on consumer sentiment rose a fourth straight month. And two leading corporations, Texas Instruments and Home Depot, raised their outlook for the rest of 2009. That's good, sports fans. But on the housing front, as I alluded to above, interest rates have been rising, with the 30-year fix now at 5.59%. One thing has become clear, government programs to reduce both rates and mortgage balances for those in trouble haven't been working. Meanwhile, foreclosures dipped in May over April, down 6%, but it was still the third highest total yet. It's now about prime loans, as you've all seen in your own neighborhoods. The Los Angeles Times reported that in many Southern California neighborhoods, home prices are down some 75% off the 2007 peak to figures not seen since 1989. That's non-inflation adjusted, just straight price. So let's say a house bought in 1989 for $100,000 rose to $400,000 at the peak and is now back down to $100,000. This tells me one thing. It's further proof we're at the bottom. Oh, sure, some areas, such as my own here in New Jersey, are still in the process of rolling over, the New York metro area being the last in the country to do so among the bubble markets, but nationwide, we're more or less there. Just remember that I said, going back to last fall, once we hit bottom, we'd stay there for a while. There will be no V-shaped recovering in housing. I've been very consistent about that. That's part of my new normal mantra, I guess. Finally, there was an interesting election in Europe as a record low turnout of 43% cast their votes for the European Parliament. The result was a resounding victory for the center-right, about 265 seats in the 736-seat assembly, compared with 185 for socialist candidates, 85 for centrists, liberals, 50 for the Greens, who've been losing support, and 36 for the radical left. The failure of center-left parties in France, Germany, Italy, and Poland was striking. While in the UK and Spain, where the left is currently in power, it was punished, especially in the case of Britain's Labour Party, represented by Prime Minister Gordon Brown, which captured just 11 EU Parliament seats compared to the Conservatives, Tories, 24. The Independence Party was actually second with 13. I liked how Anne Applebaum of the Washington Post summed it up in her op-ed. Quote, In some places, the results were stark indeed. In London last weekend, I could hardly walk down the street without being assaulted by screaming newspaper headlines, all declaring the Labour government and Gordon Brown weak, corrupt, tired, arrogant, and yes, very unpopular. In some constituencies, European candidates of the ruling Labour Party finished behind fringe parties that normally don't get noticed at all. So rapidly are British ministers resigning from the cabinet, it's hard to keep track of them. But how is it possible that the European right is doing so well and so much better than its American counterparts during what is widely described as a crisis of global capitalism? At least in part, the Europeans are winning because their leaders have the courage of their economic convictions. While the European continental welfare states have certainly kicked into high gear over the past 6 months, there are few equivalents of either George W. Bush's budget deficits or Barack Obama's spending binge. And where there have been, in Britain, for example, the high spending has hardly bought popularity. The theoretical version of this Euro-American policy gap is the recent public spat between the economic historian Niall Ferguson and the economist Paul Krugman, both of whom are at least as well known for their newspaper polemics as for their academic writing. Very crudely, Ferguson and the German government think massive deficits and government borrowing will lead to inflation and ultimately the collapse of the currency. Equally crudely, Krugman and the American administration think he's wrong. Ms. Applebaum continues, none of this is to say that any of Europe's conservatives would necessarily go down well in the United States. Picture Silvio Berlusconi, paparazzi, and teenage mistresses in tow campaigning in Mississippi. And it's also true that they don't necessarily have much in common. Allegedly, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy can hardly stand to be in the same room. But if nothing else, the success of the European center-right during the current crisis proves that there is something to their political formula. They are fiscally conservative. They are, if not socially liberal, then at least socially centrist. They haven't been swayed by the fashion for big spending. They are trying to keep some semblance of budget sanity, and at least at the moment they win elections. That was Anne Applebaum of the Washington Post. Turning to the stock market, while the gains were fractional, for the 12th time in 14 weeks, 13 of 14 for NASDAQ, stocks rose with the Dow Jones adding 36 points, 0.4%, to close at 87.99. The Dow is actually now up on the year. S&P 500 added 0.6%, while NASDAQ tacked on 0.5% to end at 1858. Even former Merrill Lynch strategist David Rosenberg, one of the early bears, has turned somewhat bullish, at least in the short run. And just one other item, the federal budget deficit for the month of May hit a record $189.7 billion, and we are at $1 trillion with 4 months left in the fiscal year, which ends September 30. The projection is for an 09 deficit of $1.8 trillion, or four times the record $450 billion in 08. Isn't that special? I'll be back with you next Saturday, June 20th. Have a great week.